Originally from Downey, California, Dave Alvin has put together a trailblazing body of work with the Blasters, X, the Knitters, and his solo releases. His new solo album is Public Domain, a collection of folk songs about love, jealousy, anger, longing, revenge, despair, survival, and hope for the future. He's a poet, producer, guitarist, singer-songwriter, and he drives the tour bus. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to introduce Mr. Dave Alvin.
Should we just start playing, I guess? Let's go, boys. I left my home and my one true love east of the Ohio River. Her father said we'd never wed, for I had neither gold nor silver. But my darling dear, please shed no tears, for I think it's fair to warn you that I'll return to claim you as the king of California. Over deserts hot and mountains cold, I traveled the Indian country, whispering your name under lonesome skies, and your memory my only company. But my darling dear, please have no fears, for I think that it's fair to warn you that I'll return to claim you as the king of California. I went up from Sacramento town to the Sierra gold fields, and I would my stake on a river bank. I was dreaming just how a rich man feels. So my darling dear, listen here. Oh, I think it's fair to warn you that I'll return to claim you as the king. Tender kiss, though his bullet in my chest is burning. Oh, my darling dear, please shed no tears. Oh, I think that it's fair to warn you that I'll return to claim you as the king. Yes, I'll return to claim you
Very nice. Dave Alvin live on the open road. The King of California. Sounding great.
Thanks.
Dave Alvin along with Rick Shea on the mandolin and Brantley Kearns on the fiddle. Welcome back to KCRW, guys.
Thanks for having us back.
You're quite welcome. It's my pleasure. Now, before I get too far, Dave, I just want to say that in addition to being a big fan of yours, it was also at a Dave Alvin concert at McCabe's that I met my beautiful wife, Alice. I'm forever indebted to you for that.
You know, this rumor has gotten back to me, and it has warmed the romantic cockles of my heart.
and it's taken.
I just hope that it works out. I'd hate to be, you know.
We're going strong so far. I don't imagine there'll be any problems. But again, I thank you for doing that show at McCabe.
That's the least I could do.
10 years ago or so.
Actually, I kind of set it up. It was all a big setup. I got her down there. I got her to, you know, to come down. Sort of a blind date thing. You didn't know about it, Gary, so.
I see.
I do that at all my shows.
One marriage, try and get one marriage for show.
I got tired of playing bars where people are always fighting and breaking up, so I decided now it shows people, we're going to hook them up. Dave's dating service.
You might want to start a little TV show or something.
That's right.
Have couples come down. You've got a new album out, Public Domain, which sounds great. Now you're known mainly as a songwriter, I guess, and now this album you've put out has no songs that you have written. How did you come to put this album out?
Well, it's an album I've always wanted to do, at least for the past like 6-7 years. Like you were saying, I'm mainly known as a songwriter, and that's really where my strength is. And so whenever I would think about doing it seriously, I'd always be like, I can't, you know, no one's going to let me do this. And earlier this year, just a couple things happened in my life that we don't need to go into, and I just decided, well, what the hell, you know? And it just seemed like the opportune time. I was producing a record in February for this singer named Christy McWilson, and the record was going really well, and I knew that the studio was available as soon as, basically, you know, like a month after we'd finished that record. I knew the studio was wide open. I knew that Rick and Brantley were available, and I could get my drummer Bobby Lloyd Hicks and my keyboard player Joe Terry out from Missouri, and I checked with John Juke Logan to see if he was available, and you know, checked with my bass player Gregory, you know, just went down the list. Everybody was free, and it just seemed like, okay, let's just go in and do it quick, you know, don't think too much about it, because it's just, you know, it's just kind of it's a labor of love, but it's also the kind of thing where, you know, where it's kind of like where John Ciardi or you know, go back and do a new translation of Dante's Divine Comedy. You know, it's like each songwriter, each poet, I think at some point or another, should go back and, if not put their own stamp on the holy writ of the public domain folk tradition, or they should at least make fools of themselves trying to do it. It's just good for a songwriter to do it, you know, instead of... 'Cause sometimes it's especially if you're a songwriter and you're trying to be part of some sort of tradition, it's good to go do it and see, you know, where you stack up in that, you know.
So that's what these are, a collection of old folk songs. These songs that you heard growing up around the house where you...
Well, some of them, I mean, a lot of them were, make a long story really short. My brother and I were sort of premature record collectors. We were collecting old 78s when I was 12, because I had some really cool older cousins who were into different types of music. So growing up, I was exposed to, you know, everything from like R&B, you know, Ray Charles, Big Joe Turner style R&B to West Coast country stuff like you know, Buck Owens and things like that, I had a cousin that was older cousin that played banjo and guitar, and he was into Dave Van Ronk and Ramblin' Jack Elliott and Brownie McGee and Sonny Terry. So by the time my brother Phil and I were, you know, at a certain age, a young age, we were already like, you know, where can we get signed by Williamson Records? So we'd go and we'd search, you know, in those days you couldn't just go to the store and get a CD, you know, box set. You had to go find old 78s. And so in the process of a few years of 78 collection, a lot of these songs on the record were just like what we listened to, like, isn't this cool, you know? And that's where I found most of them. You know, some of them, like, there's a version of Shenandoah, and there's a version of Walk Right In, you know, that those are the kind of songs you're just born, or you already know them, and in some ways you're already sick of them when you're already born, you know. And in songs like that, this album is more of an attempt to sort of put some blood back into the songs that maybe had the blood sucked out of them. You know?
Cool. Well, I know you got a few songs on the set list there from the album. Maybe you can play us a few.
We'll do one. Years and years ago, there used to be a nightclub in L.A. called the Ash Grove, and it was a blues and folk and bluegrass club, and my brother and I would, at a fairly young age, we'd cop rides from anybody, older friends, relatives, whoever, that would drive us 25 miles up from Downey to the Ash Grove, and we'd go and see, you know, everybody from Lightnin' Hopkins to Johnny Shines to J.B. Hutto to Clifton Chenier to Muddy Waters. And they had a great little tiny record store in there. And they had a guy named Jay Statman and, and the other guy's name just completely went out of my brain. But anyway, they had a great selection of beat-up old used records. And one of the beat-up old used records that I got there when I was like 13 was Blind Willie McTell's Library of Congress session that was done in 1940. And this next song was on it. And I always liked the lyrics to this song, and I kind of changed the music around a little bit and jumbled some of the lyrics around, so it was a little bit more of a narrative song. And this is an old, it's an old folk song, but I always think of it as a Blind Willie song, but it predates him. And it's a song called Delia.
Delia was a gambler, she gambled all around. Delia was a gambling girl, she laid her money down. Now all her life, God is gone. Delia's dear mother took a twist out.
Oh, well, let me start again. I can't. She took a twist. One more time. Sorry.
Delia was a gambler. She gambled all around. Delia was a gambling girl. She laid her money down. Now all I got is gone. Delia's dear mother took a trip out west. When she returned, little Delia had gone to rest. Now all I got is gone. Delia's mother weeped, Delia's father moaned. Wouldn't have been so bad if the child had died at home. Now all I got is gone. Cuddy's looking high, Cuddy's looking low. He shot poor Delia down with his 44. Now all I got is gone. Cuddy's in a barroom, drinking from a silver cup. Delia's in the graveyard, she never will wake up. Now all I got is gone. Rubber tie buggy, double seated hat. Took Dee to the cemetery, but it failed to bring her back. Now all I got is gone. The judge says to Cuddy, what's this fuss about? It's on account of these rounders trying to drive me out. Now all I got is gone. Cuddy says to the judge, what'll be my time? The judge says, poor boy, you got 99. Now all I got is gone. Delia, poor girl, she's gone. What I hate most is that she left me all alone. Now all I got is gone. Delia, Delia, how can it be?
You loved all them rabbits, but you never did love. Now all that God is gone.
Old Delia, that's Dave Alvin along with Rick Shea and Brantley Kearns live on the open road on KCRW. Yes, those are great stories about you and your brother kind of sneaking down to these shows.
Yeah, we never got into any real trouble, you know. I think Ed Pearl, who ran the Ashgrove, both the early Ashgrove and then the later Ashgrove, I think we might have given him a headache or two, you know.
But it's those Alvin boys again.
Yeah, exactly. It's those kids. Oh, those damn kids, what are they doing here, you know?
But
he's been polite enough never to complain, you know.
And you ended up working with some of these guys that you used to go down and see at these at the clubs.
Well, yeah, my brother Phil and I, we literally started, you know, we were collecting these old records, and then, you know, we kind of figured out that a lot of these guys lived here. And you could go and see them every night of the week in different places, or not, maybe not every night, but often. And so it could be in a place like the Ashgrove, or it could be in a place like the York Club down off of Florence, or the Shea Pico up on Pico Boulevard in Central LA, or you know, even the old like Parisian room, places like that. And we would, like I said, we never really got hassled being little kids going in there. I think people liked the fact that little kids were interested in it, and so I have a lot of great memories. Of literally following these guys around until like Big Joe and Eddie Clean Head Vincent and T-Bone and Lee Allen, especially Big Joe and Lee Allen, became, you know, very close lifelong friends. And it's a nice memory, because sometimes, you know, those days are gone, they're gone forever and they're never coming back. And sometimes it's very depressing when somebody, what do you want to do tonight? Well, I'd really like to go see Big Joe Turner, but I guess we'll just go get something to eat instead. You know?
Well, now people can go see Dave Alvin.
Well, so yeah.
It's the new generation.
Yeah, that's about, that's like saying I want a bottle of rare French wine and somebody handing you some wine from Wisconsin. Here, this will do.
Well, I don't know about that.
Put it on the rocks, too. It'll take better.
So when you were going to see these shows, were you and your brother Phil, were you playing music at that time, or were you writing songs?
I wasn't. No, I didn't write songs. The first song I ever wrote, I was writing songs sitting in the back seat of my mom's car when I was a little kid. I'd write songs, you know, just kind of drive her nuts. And, you know, whatever was on the radio, if it was the Coasters, I'd write a Coasters song. And if it was Marty Robbins, I'd, you know, make up a Marty Robbins song. And the first song that I ever really remember writing, and it was the greatest lesson in songwriting I ever got, actually involved Big Joe Turner. And I was about 13 or 14, and I wrote this song in my head for Big Joe Turner. I thought it was the greatest song ever written, greatest blues song ever written. And I went up to him and, you know, Big Joe, I wrote a song for you. How's it go? And he looked at me and he says, if you can't remember it, it wasn't worth anything to begin with. Greatest songwriting lesson I ever got.
Do you remember the title of it?
No, I don't remember a thing about it. It must not have been very good. You can't remember anything. But it was.
I guess not. Maybe it was the greatest song and it's lost forever.
Huh? Well, it's one of the weird things about me. You know, a lot of songwriters do things the right way. They if they get an idea for the song, they tend to write it down. Or if they're, you know, if they're wealthy enough, they go into their home studio and they demo it up with strings and choirs and all that before it's even a full song. And I'll walk around for a month or two with just an idea, and if it sticks in my head, then it might be a song, you know. So that's the backwards way of songwriting.
We are here talking with Dave Alvin on the open road at KCRW. I know you got another song from the new album.
Yeah, this is a song that I originally heard a version by Cisco Houston and Woody Guthrie. Oh, Captain, tell me true.
Does my sailor sail with me? No, he does not sail with me. He sleeps at the bottom of the sea. Now what did the deep sea say? What did the deep sea say? Well, it moaned and it groaned and it splashed and it foamed and it rolled on its weary way. Well, he promised he'd write to me, but his promise he never kept true. Never a word from my sailor have I heard since he sailed on the ocean blue. Now what did the deep sea say? What did the deep sea say? Well, it moaned and it groaned and it splashed and it foamed and it rolled on its weary way. Every day I plant on the crest of the wave. I say, take it, please, and let the petals fall upon his watery grave. Now, what did the deep sea say? What did the deep sea say? Well, it moaned and it groaned and it splashed and it foamed and it rolled on its weary way. What did the deep sea say? What did the deep sea say? Well, it moaned and it groaned and it splashed and it foamed. And it rolled on its weary way.
Dave Alvin, live on the open road.
Sorry.
That's okay. great song there from the new album Public Domain, out on High Tone Records. You mentioned all these travels with your brothers. You guys eventually went on to form the Blasters. I don't know if the Blasters was together before you joined in or
how. No. My brother always had a band. Some from like the age of 14 on. He always had really good musicians and especially guitar players. So it wasn't until I was in my 20s that I even considered, thinking of myself as a guitar player, because there were a lot of great guys out where we grew up in the Downey, Pico Rivera, Bellflower, Norwalk area that were great guitar players. So they'd all come over to the house and, play something. And then they'd leave and I'd pick up the guitar and try to figure it out. I was the runt, I was never occasionally I was allowed to play and all that, but it wasn't until the Blasters that my brother and I finally played together. And by that time we had evolved similar but different styles of guitar playing, where my brother's was he was into Blind Blake style, the that stuff, and I was real. So you put them together, and they kind of worked, and that was the basis of the band, really, of the sound.
Yeah, I had just moved out here around the time, I think, that the Blasters were starting to take off, and it was kind of interesting, because, it was mostly sort of, punk rock happening at that time, and the Blasters kind of come in with this rockabilly, root sound, and it was kind of different, yet it sort of fit right in with the punk thing.
Well, we were young, we played loud, and we played pretty fast. So, our whole idea was... when I found out I was working as a fry cook in Long Beach, and I at the age of 21 had figured out that my life was basically over, that I had peaked, and then I found out that I saw this thing on the news about the Sex Pistols, and this, you know, outrageous new band and blah, 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 and the kids today, and what are you going to do with them? One of those kind of stories. Then they said, you know, and the lead singer, Johnny Rotten, is 21 years old. And I was like, wait a second. You know, I'm not dead yet. So I shaved the beard, and we started the band. It was kind of like, we were the last guys left in our neighborhood that were musicians. Everybody else had either had, you know, gone to jail or died or gone to Vietnam, or, you know, everybody was damaged goods in some ways, and we were like the last four guys left. So we decided, let's see how far we could get playing exactly what we wanted to play and see if we could quit our day jobs. And that was our goal for success. And so it's been 20 years. This last January, I haven't worked a day job. So
no more fry cooking for Dave Alvin. Well, that's
people
good.
People of California are very grateful.
So I've got a question here off the internet for you.
Yeah.
Would you ask Dave if he plans to keep publishing poetry? Does he read poetry in public very often? Really liked Any Rough Times Are Behind You Now? Mary.
Eventually I'm going to publish some more. I have a weird thing about, you know, there's great poets out there. There's people that taught me how to write, people like Gerald Loughlin and Elliot Freed and Richard Lee down at Cal State Long Beach are great poets. There's great poets, you know, the greatest poet lives here in California is Philip Levine, who lives up in Fresno, and those are great poets. And sometimes when I write a song and it's a good song, I know it's a pretty good song. And so, and I'll stack some of my good songs up against a lot of other people's good songs. But there are great poets, and I've written a couple of okay poems that I would not be embarrassed to be seen with in public. But sometimes I go through a thing where I don't want to write poetry, or I don't want people to read it, because it gets kind of personal. But yeah, I'm probably going to put out another book of poems. Why the hell not? I don't like reading poetry anymore. I don't like doing readings because I was never very good at it. And poetry readings have just become, probably for the better, they've become more performance art things. It's not like a poet actually up there reading their poem. It's people memorize their poems and they, you know, they make a confrontational and all that, which is probably better entertainment, but it's not my style of doing poetry readings. I'm the old paper in the hand, staring at the paper, school of poetry reading.
Well, I'm sure your poems, you know, work hand in hand with your song lyrics. Actually, I looked
not
at your
really.
Book. No.
They're similar, and a lot of songs start out as poems. You know, you write a song, and you've got this going for you. You write a poem, and it's, I wrote a poem. You know what I mean? And between you and me, I mean, I did enough poetry readings as a kid where in bar rooms in Long Beach and stuff where I was dying to have a band up there behind me, you know, while a bunch of drunk Long Beachians were throwing things. So it's,
well, that's not good.
But I kind of miss those poetry readings, you know. I kind of wish there were more poetry readings like that these days.
Well, in looking through your poetry book, I noticed it was a piece, I forget the actual title, but it seemed like it kind of evolved into the 4th of July song.
Yeah, yeah. We were going to do that song, weren't we? Yeah, that was like a two or three page poem that I was at a bowling alley, I don't know, about 3 months after I wrote that poem, and I wasn't bowling, but I was enjoying beverages while friends of mine were bowling. And about a half hour into this action-packed evening, it suddenly dawned on me, hey, that poem would be a great song, especially if there's music, you know. And I left the bowling alley, and really pretty much by the time I had driven from the bowling alley back to where I was living, I kind of had the basis of the song done. And that only happens about once a lifetime, so we'll do 4th of July here. She's waiting for me when I get home from work. Oh, but things just ain't the same. She turns out the lights,
She cries in the dark and won't answer when I call her name. On the stairs I smoke a cigarette alone. Mexican kids are shooting fireworks for love. Hey, babe, it's the 4th of July. Hey, babe, it's the 4th of July. It's the 4th of July. I don't have the strength to go on the lost side of town in a dark apartment. I gave up trying so long ago. On the stairs I smoke a cigarette alone. Kids are shooting flowers below. Hey, babe, it's the 4th of July. Hey, babe, it's the 4th of July. Whatever happened, I apologize. So dry your tears and baby, walk outside. It's the 4th of July.
Dave Alvin live on the Open Road. That song has turned into kind of a standard, I think.
Yeah, it kind of has. A couple of songs I've written have, which is kind of neat. The first hit I ever had was the song called Marie Marie, and it was a hit overseas, everywhere in the world except the United States. And it's great. It's this band Buckwheat Zydeco recorded it. This Louisiana band, and so when they recorded it, all the Zydeco bands started playing it. The bar bands that started playing it, thinking that it was an old Zydeco song or something. And I'd written it originally thinking of it as being a Cajun song, like for somebody, like a family group, like the Balfa Brothers or somebody like that. So this whole thing came around where I was in Switzerland one time working on a record over there with a Swiss group, and we got Gino Delafosse to come in and play accordion. And so we're talking, and I was talking about his father, who I was a big fan of, John Delafosse, and I finally said, somehow it came out that I wrote Marie Marie, and he was like, no way, no, I know that you wrote that, you know. So it became like a bar band standard in Louisiana, and that's a good feeling. I can go to bed at night sleeping well knowing that.
Absolutely. Yeah, your songs are so rooted in Americana and California specifically. What is it about America that sort of inspires you so much to write? I mean, you're so sort of, you know, the archetypical American songwriter.
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think that it's mandatory that a writer or a painter or musician or anybody that's creative. I don't think it's mandatory that you have a sense of place in your work, but it helps, and it gives more dimension and depth to your stuff. I think that. There's certainly, some of the songs definitely are California plays. Some of them are American plays. They're just placed out somewhere out there on the interstates or in the dark out of the interstate. If I lived in France, if I was to suddenly become rich and go get an apartment in downtown Paris, my songs would change, you know. I'm just that kind of writer, you know. You tend to, when you grow up, and a lot of what you write is based on the first things you see in the first 17, 20 years of your life, those colors, those images, and that's what shapes you. And then as you get older, other things creep in and all that. So, you know, I'm waiting for that those $1 million, and I'll answer that question from France. I'll phone you.
Okay.
On the Champs-Élysées.
I got a question here from the internet from Josh at Dangerous Monkey. Do you feel the influence of traditional rock and blues is fading given the rise in popularity of electronic music?
Well, yeah. Well, I think there's several reasons why it's faded or fading, but I don't think it'll fade away. But I think it comes and goes. It's like the waves on the ocean. I think one of the reasons why it fades is you get used to things having the blood sucked out of them, having the danger removed, having the mystery taken away from them. And when that happens, people lose interest. It loses its charm. You know, you can see a lot of what contemporary country music, where everything that was great about country music has been completely eliminated from country music. So when you listen to it, when kids grow up today in the suburbs, you know, because it's basically just suburban music now, so they grow up in the suburbs and their parents listen to whatever comes out of Nashville, and the kids are not going to ever understand what Hank Williams is, because they see somebody with a cowboy hat singing, they think it's this awful middle of the road, you know, very well performed, perfectly in tune, pro-tooled, you know, over-arranged dreck, you know, done by perfectly wonderful, talented people, but, you know, awful songs and silly sentiments and all that. And the kids are just going to go, blech, you know. And they have no idea that country music was once an outside music. It was as outside as anything, any band that, you know, if from Rage Against the Machine on. I mean, it was outside music. Blues was the same thing. R&B, much of R&B was outside music. And so what happens is as you museumify these things, you know, then it loses its impact. And again, it's mystery. But it's never going to go away because, especially like the blues, you know, I mean, the blues survived how many bad blues jams in the late 60s and early 70s. I'm not talking about Mike Bloomfield or people like that. I'm just talking about people that just couldn't play. And it's an amazing, remarkable musical form or poetic form that it could survive so many bad performances and so many bad songs, you know, that you know, Bob Dylan could make a record like he did a couple years ago, The Time Out of Mind, which is a brilliant blues album, you know. I see a band. I went a couple weeks ago and saw the North Mississippi All-Stars, and they're basically doing if Mississippi Fred McDowell was in the Allman Brothers and Jimi Hendrix was jamming with them. And it was an amazing show. And so it's one of these things of, as long as there's people that are willing to, you know, put their life on the line and not worry about selling millions of records, the musics will stay alive. They'll go crawl under a rock for a while, and most of pop culture, you know, will stop paying attention. Then they come back around,
and people will seek it out.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, how many times? I mean, I've been around. I've been a professional musician 20 years. My thing about techno is it's already been here 3 or 4 times around. This is not like some new thing. I mean, Cabaret Voltaire and Depeche Mode and all that? It's old hat. Everything's old hat, you know, except Kid Rock.
We are here on the Open Road talking with Dave Alvin. He's got a new album out called Public Domain, and I think you got another tune for us there.
Yeah, I'm kind of, I don't know what to do here. Maybe we should do, we're going to change.
Oh, boy.
We could do one off my last record. Let's do key of D-flat, or D-minor, I'm sorry. Do Mary Brown. I'll do this song, because this is, when you grow up listening to songs like are on the Public Domain record, they'll shape and warp your songwriting, and this is one of my songs that's sort of in that vein.
Well, my name is Charlie Thomas, and I'm as good a man as you. And for the love of Mary Brown, there's nothing that I won't do. Well, her husband was a banker, yet she told me he was cruel. So I left his body lying in the yard where the roses grew. But she and I grew up neighbors where the houses looked the same. And I swear that I loved Mary Brown before I knew her name. And after she married and he moved away, she'd still come back and lay with me like nothing ever changed. I know what's wrong and right. What goes around comes around. There ain't nothing that I won't do but love a Mary. Like him, they always look down on me, 'cause I've done a little time for armed robbery. Yeah, but Mary Brown knows I'm from a good family. She didn't say nothing when she slipped me the back door key. I know what's wrong and right. What goes around comes around. There ain't nothing that I won't do but love a Mary Brown.
Well, at my trial, she testified, she kissed me once over twice.
But she swore that was long before she became his wife. And every time I looked at her, she avoided my eyes. And the jury sentenced me to 25 years to life. Now I haven't seen Mary Brown since I tried her thing. And she never answers the letters that I say. You know, I heard that she married her husband's best friend. Yeah, but for the love of Mary Brown, you know, I'd do it all again. I know what's wrong in her eyes. What goes around comes around. And I won't do for the love of Mary Brown. There ain't nothing that I won't do.
Sweet.
Man.
Dave Alvin live on the open road. Rick Shea on the mandolin. Brantley Kearns on the violin. Guys, thank you so much. I don't know
Thanks
if you have anything else planned, or we should move on at this point.
Well, we could probably whip off one more.
You're invited to do another one if you're up for it.
Well, we shouldn't leave things on a down note like that, you know?
Well, we wouldn't do that.
We wouldn't want to do that here on a Sunday night.
Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, all righty. We'll wrap this up. This is a song off the new record, Public Domain, on the Hightone label. This is also an old folk song. And nobody gets killed in this one. They're just threatened. It's a funny thing about American folk music. It's just like America. It's very violent. I have a... They should put those stickers on these records, you know. Parental warning. This is an old song called Railroad Bill. Let me do that again. Railroad Bill ought to be a kid. He never worked and he never will. I wanna ride Railroad Bill. Railroad Bill from the midnight train. Women and children all crying his name. I wanna ride Railroad Bill. Railroad Bill was a mean old man. Shot the lantern out of the brake man's hand. I wanna ride a railroad bill. Dollar in his hand, looking to steal any woman he can. I wanna ride a railroad bill. Railroad bill, well, he took my wife. He swore to God he's gonna break my life. I wanna ride a railroad bill. Thank you.
stand with a 38 pistol in my right hand. I'm gonna ride, 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 railroad bill. Gotta be kid. He never worked and he never will. I wanna ride, 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 railroad bill. Ride, 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 railroad bill.
Excellent. Dave Alvin live on the Open Road. Thanks again, all you guys, for coming down here. Dave, I know you just did a show at the Roxy a week or so ago.
Yeah.
Anything else coming up?
We're playing. Rick and Brantley and I are playing at the Street Scene down in San Diego on Friday night, doing a show with Peter Case.
Oh, cool.
And then we're out on the road for about 2 months, and we're coming back to L.A. in November, I believe. I'm not sure what venue, but I think it'll be an acoustic show. Then we go back out with the band. So it's never ending.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. So you have sort of two setups. You got the sort of acoustic setup, and when you play live, I mean, you guys tend to rock out a bit.
Yeah, well, I have two different audiences, and they overlap a little, but there are some times when you can draw a line right through the middle of the nightclub, you know. One of my heroes is Richard Thompson, and I was on tour with him. I did a tour with him last year, and I was amazed. You know, he can go out and play louder than I've ever played. And then he can turn around and play acoustic, and then turn around and go play louder than ever. And that's really what I like to do. I mean, in a show, it's difficult because my fans are a little more boisterous at times. And so what I tend to do is I tend to do about 6 months of touring in clubs with the full band, then do a couple months of doing the listening rooms across America, the folk clubs and acoustic venues. So it's a juggle. Yeah.
Well, we'll let the kids know about the shows when the dates, and I think there's a knitter show.
Kids know.
Well, there's a knitter show as well coming up.
Yeah,
at
we got a couple knitters on the
17th. So, and the new album is called Public Domain on High Tone Records. Yeah. And I think I have a strong feeling that at the turn of the next century, when some young musicians are looking for the great American songbook songs, I think they're going to look at some Dave Alvin songs.
Of course, they won't know who wrote them, but
you won't get your publishing. But thanks again, you guys, for coming down. Really
for
appreciate
us.
It.